Right. The weather today. Look out your window. Absolute perfection for summing up the political scene in Northern Ireland. You don't get any more appropriate weather than we're having at this minute in time. Totally sums up the politics. Dismal and annoying.
The political situation at Stormont is stagnating. With a deadline missed and the talks going nowhere, the feeling of gloom is hard to shake. All day the politicians and the press waited for James Brokenshire to outline to MPs at Westminster what he plans to do next. But before he even spoke, the two main parties gave press conferences, and it was clear a deal is not on the cards.
We were prepared to get these issues resolved when the Assembly election was over.
The onus is on Sinn Féin. Either they can lead us into another election, or they can lead us towards direct rule, inexorably towards direct rule, and they know the consequences of that.
Now we find ourselves up against the 12th of July, where the atmosphere becomes so hostile that the DUP are even less likely to move on some of these issues.
Pressure's on Sinn Féin to make the move, to show leadership to all of the people of Northern Ireland, and not just in a very narrow political base.
I continue to believe that a deal remains achievable. And if agreement is reached, I will bring forward legislation to enable an executive to be formed, possibly as early as this week. I am clear that the return of inclusive devolved government by a power-sharing executive is what would be profoundly in the best interests of Northern Ireland.
Deadlines have come and gone in this talks process, and perhaps that's why James Brokenshire isn't keen to set a new one. With this statement, he's bought more time, but he's talking about days, not weeks. Nevertheless, in the short term, the talking is set to continue.
We are on the road to nowhere.
So is that true? Are we absolutely on the road to nowhere? That report there from Tracy McGee, Tracy McGee's commentary being used within our report, deputy editor with UTV Live, input from Conor Murphy from Sinn Féin, Arlene Foster from the DUP, as well as Secretary of State James Brokenshire. Let me speak to Malachy O'Doherty. Malachy, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
It's very easy on a really poor morning weather-wise like this morning to be down about things, but you know, you don't need much encouragement to be down about our politicians.
Well, that's right. I mean, the song says road to nowhere, but actually there's no such place as nowhere. So it's a road to somewhere, and it's somewhere very different from what we had last year, when the joke was that the executive was led by Marlene. You remember then, you know, when there was that sense that the DUP and Sinn Féin had almost fused into a single party, and that they would do anything to stay together. I think the Sinn Féin found that that's not what their base really really liked, and changed that. And but I mean, where that goes to is anybody's guess at the moment. It's not going back to stable devolution, even if the two parties, by some miracle, made the calculation that it was in their best interest to make a deal today. They would not do it. They would not inspire us with the confidence that they would be able to hold that together, you know, beyond another crisis. And so that's it. I mean, we're going towards, well, if we're going towards direct rule, Sinn Féin will say, no, we oppose that entirely, and they would organise their protest energies against that. If we're going to just simply stagnate, you know, Brokenshire looks now like the man without a plan, and he wants to keep the thing ticking over. So it stagnates, you know, it stagnates, and then people are waiting for money for projects. People are waiting for some kind of clarity about what policy is in a whole range of areas, and nothing gets done. So, you know, there isn't a nowhere. There's only a despairing space, and in that despairing space is also the possibility of increasingly fractious division between the communities represented by these parties.
So let's be positive. It is okay. The 4th of July. It is a wet, dismal morning. The children are off school. Parents are probably tearing their hair out because they don't know how much they should be appreciating teachers and classrooms, because the kids are under their feet. The dog, as I said, is shaking himself. Everyone's soaking, and it's just horrible. But let's be positive. We've got politicians up there at Stormont who are still talking, and maybe they can deliver. Let's absolutely be as positive as we possibly can. Let's be vibrant. Okay. How can they work it? How can they make it a success?
If I was talking to Gerry Adams this morning, I would say, listen, Gerry, here's the situation you're in. You brought down the executive in January. You had an election in March. You got a fantastically good result in the election in March. You've practically drawn level with unionism in the Assembly. That's the only equality that actually matters, is the seats that you've got. And you should really capitalise on that. You should cash that in now. If you risk another election after the unionists have got their heads together, then you could actually fall back and lose that position of near equality in numbers. With that near equality in numbers, there's no question of somebody being called a deputy first minister, and is a very strong argument for getting the justice ministry shared. So why don't you bank that? And if I was talking to Arlene Foster, I would say, Arlene, you owe Theresa May a big, big favour here. You know, you negotiated hard. You got the $1.5 billion. You've got you're now the sort of person who gets flown around in RAF jets, and things are hunky dory for you. But you do owe some, you know, Theresa May is not going to thank you for dumping the day-to-day administration of Northern Ireland in her lap. So go the extra mile if you have to. They both have, you know, up to this point, you could see that there was a kind of vicious circle, you know, that the deadlock was yielding electoral results for them, that they were in a climate in which it was actually better for them to be strongly oppositional and putting it up to the other side. We may have passed that line. We may have come over that hump. We may now be back in a space where the best interests of the Sinn Féin and the DUP both lie in a deal. And they both may find it quite hard to do that. But, you know, the alternative is you go into a summer, which can be a difficult summer around parades and bonfires and the rest of it, and you may find that the mood isn't there. Or you may find that, you know, if they're... they've had the summer to think about it on the beach or at the top of Errigal, that they will be more amenable to it. But my calculation is that they both have more to gain at this stage by making a deal than by not doing. Then again, you bring Brexit into it and what happens further down the line. But essentially, Sinn Féin's in danger of losing the electoral gains it made in March.
No,
the DUP's in danger of sullying its relationship with the Tories.
Okay, you did mention there's one reference there to Brexit. Legacy is on the long finger, so we presume it's a hurdle that will have to be jumped at some point. You didn't have any dialogue there about RHI, about Irish language, about LGBT. It's one thing, given that pep talk in the changing rooms to Adams and Foster, but they're now out on the field of play and it's getting rough again.
Well, do you know, I wonder what they're saying to each other. I mean, James Brokenshire, is he torturing them? You know, they seem to have said all they're capable of saying to each other. They've crashed two deadlines already, and they've got to go back into that room and look across the table at each other. And what are they going to do but repeat what they've already said? You know, it must be agony for them. In terms of the big issues, in terms of RHI has gone to a public inquiry. A public inquiry is going to deal with that. That may turn out very, very bad for Arlene Foster and the DUP, or it may turn out good for them. It may absolve them. But it's being dealt with.
Yeah, but where does Arlene go while it's being dealt with?
Well, it's out of the question to ask Arlene to stand aside now, you know, isn't it?
Has anyone told that to Sinn Féin?
I think so. I think we heard even further back in April, you heard Gerry Adams saying things like, well, you know, that's something that'll come at the end of negotiations, and that's the point at which that'll become an issue as the last item in the agenda, virtually.
So let's presume then Sinn Féin are going to back down on that, which was one of the central issues on how the executive collapsed. They're going to back down on that. What about the Irish Language Act then?
The Irish Language Act is a token, essentially, for equality between nationalists and unionists. It's very, very important to Sinn Féin. The DUP have said, OK, well, what about incorporating it inside a broad cultural act? So are we really saying that devolution to Northern Ireland weighs in the balance against the question of whether Ulster Scots should be included in the broader Irish Language Act? I mean, nobody in the right mind would say that on balance, you know, for the sake of separating those two things out into separate legislation, you should simply abolish devolution. I mean, that's daft. That's beyond daft. In fact, I think Sinn Féin made a tactical error last week when Declan Kearney came out and made it plain, or made it appear as if the only sticking point was that, you know, the Irish Language Act and whether it would be a standalone act or not. Because that just looks ludicrous, you know, that anyone would say, for goodness sake, you know, other countries don't have the luxury of just collapsing government when they get into a huff about something. The Irish Language Act is important to some people. I can't imagine for many people it weighs in the balance against devolution, you know, but it is important. The other issue that's in play is the same-sex marriage, the petition of concern. You know, these are issues that should be solvable. I mean, the DUP should basically say, and can say, you know, with the numbers we have, you know, we would not insist on a petition of concern on issues like same-sex marriage, but would have a free vote, might even have the party whip on the DUP on it, but still, if the majority of the Assembly goes for it, they'll go for it. I mean, where would that be embarrassing for Arlene? I mean, the same-sex marriage is now legal in Scotland, England and Wales, and in the Irish Republic. She can have her principled stand against it and still, even in the end, say, you know, it actually makes us more British than we were.
Would they get it sorted out? Conor Murphy made reference to the 12th, or the toxic 12th coming up. Would they get it sorted out if there wasn't the 12th? Would the DUP relent on the Irish Language Act if they didn't have bonfires to light?
I don't know. I think there are other risks for them as well. I mean, the bonfire issue could become a very, very serious political issue. I mean, it's we're having these enormous illegal bonfires stuffed with tires that are going to burn. We have the council and the DUP and the council defending a measure by which they actually minded some of these pallets for a bonfire. They don't know who owns these pallets or where they came from, whether they were stolen or whatever. You know, who owns that many pallets? You know, and so there is potential massive political embarrassment for the DUP in that. There's massive political embarrassment for Theresa May. You know, I mean, after the fire in London, after Grenfell, you know, your partnership party in government is providing cover for people who are building gigantic towers of fire right in the middle of housing estates.
That is going to be just on that.
Just
on that. That's going to happen the length and breadth of Northern Ireland, especially here in Belfast. You only have to drive through the standard communities to see it. There are a number of bonfires being built very close to high-rise dwellings. Yeah. And any journalist worth his salt across the, or her salt across the water will put that in the tabloids on the 12th of July morning and say, what are they at? Now, it's in many ways it's unfair because they've been doing it for generations on those patches of grass, but it's going to look so weird, so sinister this year. You have a point in that. As for the council and this investigation that's now going to be led by the chief executive of the council as to what happened with these pallets that were being looked after that eventually were stolen, how is it that no one seems to know why the ratepayers' money was being spent on either the option of the council helping the bonfire builders or on the option of the council helping the community to overcome the problems caused by the bonfire builders? That's embarrassing at a very local level for Belfast City Council.
It is embarrassing, and the problem is that nobody will address the bonfire problem. You say these have been going on for years, but actually they're getting bigger and bigger. When you and I were lads, Frank, the local bonfire was a few busted sofas, you know, and in a bit of waste ground, and now it's this massive tower. That's not a traditional bonfire. That's a very recent tradition, if you like, that it is so big and so dangerous. And last year we had a house catch fire in the Shankill Road. The year before that at Cobham Street, you know, we had houses, terraced houses, hosed down, you know, to keep them safe. You know, a government in London which is agonising over Grenfell Tower and the failings which led to people dying in that massive fire cannot be indifferent to this. And yet, how would you deal with it? The only way you could deal with this that I can think of is to bring in the army. to dismantle those bonfires. And that's the nightmare scenario that everybody's avoiding, you know, the huge amount of physical confrontation that would be involved to prevent these bonfires.
But surely you're hardly contemplating that, Malachy. You're hardly thinking
you're hardly
suggesting it, that the army come to Finnehy and take down the bonfire that's three-quarter ways built beside the high-rise there.
No. Well, I mean, I don't know what the solution is. I know that nobody knows what the solution is, otherwise they would have applied it. But in the current climate, Frank, it is surely... I mean, the danger is that if there's a repetition of a house fire like last year, if there's any death or injury related to bonfires this year, it will be a huge story. And it will be a story that will whose embarrassment will reach right to the heart of government and the relationship between the DUP and the Tories. And that's a reality, you know, and that's a reality that arises out of fortuitous circumstances, the deal between the Tories and the DUP. It's a reality that arises out of nobody having had any idea over past years how to deal with the bonfire problem, how to get them reduced in size, how to get them managed and legal, and how to protect residential property. No one's been able to do this. It's completely illegal, you know. It's completely illegal. There was a guy, there was an American tourist being interviewed on TV last night in the news, and he said, you know, oh, in my country this would be completely impossible. There's regulations against this sort of thing. But, you know, it's really cool that you can be so open about it here. You know, he's not realizing that this is entirely illegal, you know, in many cases, and totally outrageous. It is not dealt with simply because the measures that would be required to deal with it are beyond contemplation.
It's also the better of two evils, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the better of two evils, but it presents this year a possible political fallout that it would not have done in previous years.
This is true. Malachy, thank you very much indeed. Your opinions on Malachy's commentary there, very welcome. And he is right. If there is a massive bonfire close to a 24-storey building where people live, and there are a number of them in Belfast, and it's going like a furnace, an inferno, pictures will be taken, they'll be seen across the water. People will think we are mad, absolutely mad, lighting a fire so close to a high-rise block of flats. And then they will link that fire to the Democratic Unionist Party. There is no question or doubt about that. Are you concerned? Are you concerned about that sort of imagery going across all of the United Kingdom? Your opinions are welcome. 9:25.